Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
Brought to you by Active Iron
on News Talk.
You are listening to Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. It's 1800 453 106 is the number if you want to get in touch. Or like my next two guests, you can always drop me an email if there's anything you want to talk about. That's lunchtimelive at newstalk.com. The situation in some of our hospital A&E departments doesn't seem to be getting any better. A lot of people with fairly mixed experiences of going through the A&E departments. Michelle is with us on the line because, Michelle, you want to talk about your own experience with your mum.
Yes, Andrea, I do. Good afternoon.
How are you?
I suppose I need, how are we? We're on day 11 of this sort of nightmare experience, really. Just a bit of a backstory. I'm a nurse myself and I'm working in general practice. I live 10 minutes away from UHL and would always have been extremely, you know, positive about hospital experiences until it kind of came to my own door. So what happened was my mother is 81, in relatively good health, but developed a pretty bad kidney infection about 2 weeks ago. She required an ambulance to go to UHL on Saturday, the 23rd of the month. And she was admitted, seen pretty quickly, but then she was put into a corridor. So when they talk about a corridor, basically in UHL in Limerick, there's three zones. So you have A, B and C. You have a nurse's station and then you just really have the pathways up and down. So the trolleys are lined up like cars that are parked in a parking lot. There's men and there's women. The lights are on 24 hours a day. It's chaotic. Each person in the ED had to have a family member with them because there just aren't enough nurses or doctors to look after them. So over the time, my mother became confused. It was coming up to midnight. The lights were still on. She couldn't sleep. So the registrar on duty just said to me, look, we've booked your mother in for, she's complete workup in St. John's Hospital, which is kind of a step-down hospital.
Yeah.
And we can admit her there tomorrow. So I took her home at that time of the night and we presented to St. John's the next day. They weren't aware that we were coming. They had no medical notes. They didn't know what was wrong with her. But they did agree to see her. They assessed her and decided that she needed admission. She was very unwell. So she was going into, she was developing sepsis basically from the infection. She then became quite confused. She was dehydrated. Her iron count was dropping. She was breathless. So there was a lot of medical complications. So the next night I got a call at 2 a.m. to say she was being transferred back to UHL, that her heart rate had gone up to 170 beats a minute, which is life-threatening. So when I got there, she was in resus. So resus would be sort of the area that critically ill patients go.
Yeah.
She was on a trolley there. I'm not in any way criticising the staff that were on duty because they were fantastic. But there was an elderly man next to her who was stripping and shouting at the nurses and he passed urine on the floor. Then a body of a deceased person was pushed by her bed, which frightened her even more. Her heart rate was going up and up and up. So I stayed with her till 5 a.m. And left. And when I came back the following morning, she was back in the corridor again. And this time she was sandwiched. She was in a line of six people on a trolley. So there was men behind her with their genitals exposed, which completely was, she didn't know where she was. You know, she couldn't understand why there was naked people around. They were all shouting to get out of the toilet. Trays of food were just being put down and nobody was feeding them. It just really, I just couldn't believe it in this day and age. You know, Ireland is allegedly a first world wealthy country. And this, I couldn't believe that this was actually going on in front of my eyes.
Why were people changing in, or were their genitals exposed in the corridor? Were they changing or?
The majority of them were elderly and they were confused and they were just kept removing their clothing.
Okay.
You know, and it was just that nobody, those people who didn't have anybody with them to cover them up were just left exposed. So at one point, my brother and myself, we went away for lunch and in the space of an hour when we came back, she had pulled out her drip and she was gone. So she'd left the unit. So I went up to the nurse's station and said, my mother is gone. So nobody came out to help me. And eventually, somebody I do know professionally came out and they started looking for her. So they found her outside the unit. So when they brought her back in, her heart rate had gone back up to 170 again. And then she ended up back in resus. So she now has heart damage from that. She's still in septic. She still has septic symptoms. She's completely cognitively declined. And she's just so distressed by the whole thing. She was left in a corridor until Friday. So she had 4 days of that experience.
And this is effectively, as we know, Michelle, when we often hear about people waiting on a trolley for a bed. This was your mum's experience of waiting on a trolley.
Now she became so distressed and agitated, they actually did move her into a cubicle, which gave some relief. And I spoke to the consultant and said, look, her mental health is going here because of this. Can we please can I take her home? I'll send her anywhere. So they did transfer her back to St. John's Hospital, where she currently is.
That's where she's now, is it, Michelle?
She is now.
She's been seen, but she's in the kind of the step down.
She is.
Hospital.
But the whole thing, really, I mean, the lack of privacy, you know, if you walk from zone A to zone B to zone C, there's just, you know, seats and couches and whatever. I saw one man getting his nose packed because he was having a huge nosebleed. Every second person had a rip in their arm. Some people were getting sick into disposable bags. Every member of the public, nobody was stopped going in. So there was people wandering around. You didn't know whether they were patients or where they were from. There were drug-seeking people there. There were alcoholics sleeping in the waiting room when I was going out that night. So the complete lack of security, the complete lack of dignity, and really only the fact that I was pushing to get my mother's heart rate checked occasionally. Now, I didn't torment them, but I thought, oh my God, she could have a heart attack from this. And this is in 2024. I've seen the protests outside UHL, and this is going on for years and years and years. The Midwest, they downgraded the hospital, Venice, Nina and St. John's, to low. They're effectively minor injury units, so they'll see very basic stuff.
Yeah.
Anything surgical is sent back out to UHL. So I was told by the consultant on Wednesday that the hospital was full. They were trying to get her a bed in CCU. They had nowhere to send her. So the whole problem is, like, if you go in, say if you're in a car accident or your appendix bursts, you will be seen and you'll be seen very quickly and treated properly. But then you're abandoned, basically, because they've nowhere to put you.
It's a capacity issue.
I'm just incredulous. I just couldn't believe that this is modern day Ireland.
Yeah, and you know more than most, Michelle, because like your mum, I'm listening to you there. Your mum is so lucky to have you as her advocate and able to to lobby on her behalf, and the fact that you are equipped with the professional knowledge of being a nurse and to know those signs and symptoms, and even listening to you talking about her heart rate, you know, and you know all of the things to jump up and down about and to ask for when probably the rest of us wouldn't, and we don't have the medical experience.
And of course not.
And like you're still working as a nurse. I know not in Limerick, but you work as a nurse. Like as a professional, when you look at that, what's going through your head, Michelle?
Just, I suppose, disbelief. Really, I just think, oh my God, you know, keep it. We used to always say at work, keep us from A&E, and you know, obviously your luck will run out someday. You know, I am a member of a nursing group, and I put up that post, and at least 10 came back with stories of their own parents having a similar situation, some fatalities, unfortunately. And a lot of these nurses who have left A&E, who had worked there for 20, 30 years, just left because they couldn't look at it. They couldn't deal with it anymore. They felt morally, professionally, ethically, it was wrong.
How was your mum now, Michelle?
She's still very unwell. She's still very unwell. She will have to have surgery, but she'll probably have to go back to UHL, but they're waiting on a bed.
And
so
I'm
kind of a vicious circle, unfortunately.
It's, you know, as you said, when you get in or you come in as a direct emergency through the department and you're seen, or if you're in as a patient, but it seems to be the issue is getting... It's getting from the corridor to the room. And as you said, it's not, you're not critical of the staff, or we have actually contacted the hospital, I should say that too, to ask them for a statement. But I have no doubt, Michelle, that your experience is not isolated.
Absolutely not. I mean, you know, I hear patients telling, you know, I work in general practice, they come back in and tell us, oh, this happened to me and that happened to me. And I'd be kind of thinking, maybe, but by goodness, it is happening. And it's, you know, for example, you know, my mother's instance, you know, she had an endangering a life-threatening irregular heartbeat for which she was treated, but then she wasn't monitored for several hours. Then she left the building and it worsened the condition. And then she was brought back into resuscitation and there was a panic. They were coming in every direction with monitors and drugs and whatever. So, I mean, that was contributory, I think, to probably whatever type of heart failure she'll have from that. So just not necessary. And where is all the money? Where is all the money in this country going? You know, they're on about the exchequer excess and whatever. And, you know, OK, they may have the appropriate staffing levels, but the population is increasing and the government are not putting in. They should be building new hospitals all over the country with A&E departments that can deal with these sort of things. Community care, there isn't any community care. You know, people can't even take their parents home. You might get half an hour. You get half an hour home help. And this is a friend of mine who had to deal with this. Her mother had end-stage dementia. She got half an hour in the morning to get the mother out of bed and half an hour in the evening. And then they were left with her for the rest of the day trying to manage her.
It's very...
And really, I suppose, there's just a sense of impotence, I think, in Limerick, because we just think... There's nothing we can do. We can protest all we like.
You've nearly become so used to it, Michelle.
Yeah, just you know, there's other cases that people have. You know, it's in the news about people dying.
Yeah, there's it's been cases
that were.
It's not the first time we've heard of these sort, you know, shocking experiences and what people see and what they witness when they're there waiting on a bed. Michelle, stay with us for a moment because I think I've got Sharon is with us on the line as well. Sharon, you got in touch about your experience with your dad.
Yes, hi, Andrea. And my heart goes out to Michelle and I wish her mum a speedy recovery. I was just shocked. And I just put pen to paper and sent a wee note because I thought too many people just turn away. You drive by a hospital and you don't give it a second thought as to, you know, what's going on behind the doors. My dad had an incident where he collapsed and he had to go in to be reviewed and we went to UHL. Now, I live in Donegal, so I'm not familiar with UHL. I've heard it on the radio many a time. And I've witnessed many things in Letterkenny Hospital, which was very sad. But at the end of the day, I just see it, you know, lessons aren't learnt at all. And, you know, when I went into emergency with my birth dad, John, we went in and... I approached the counter with him and John is very articulate and was able, you know, to speak for himself. And the man at the desk, when I got to the counter with my dad, this is the thing that shocked me most. There was a pool of fresh blood just sitting on the countertop. And I immediately said to the young man behind the counter, because there is an opening there to pass paperwork. And I said, oh, my goodness, you know, sorry, there's blood here. And I said it in a very, you know, like in a way, just pointing out it's an observation, you know.
In case they hadn't seen it maybe or something.
Yes. Yeah. It was so I knew they could not have not seen it, but I was in disbelief. But I wanted John to be seen. So I didn't want to come across too hard. But he ignored me. And then he was asking John for his name and details. And John didn't hear him and started to discuss what had happened beforehand. And then he asked him again, what's your name? So at this point, John had his hearing aids in, so he couldn't hear him correctly. And so he leaned over to ask, or to hear the man correctly. And he was just about to put his hand on top of the blood. And I just said, no, John, you know, there's blood there. Yeah. And I said to the guy again, I said, I'm so sorry, but there's blood here. And he ignored me. He didn't even address it. And at this point then, I just thought, oh my goodness, has it got to this? Now, the room was full of people like Michelle, said Amy, I mean, there was so many sad cases in that room. and security. I felt security could have, there was a man in a wheelchair just being pushed from A to B because he was kind of passed out. And it's not for me to say he had a drug problem, but it looked like it. There were, you know, it was just a very scary place. And I've been in A&E quite a bit with sick relatives, and it was shocking.
And this was you really experiencing, I suppose, another hospital, or, you know, it's and a different hospital in a different county to see what it was like. And similar to Michelle, Sharon, again, people in trolleys, was it, in corridors?
Oh, horrific. Just to wrap that up, but it took that man 45 minutes to wipe the blood. He put on gloves and he wiped the blood. And I just thought to myself, God almighty, took that long. And then when we got behind the scenes, like, it was similar scenes to Michelle. It was just, and unfortunately, John needed a trolley, but there wasn't one available. So he had to sit in a chair. And they, you know, the nurses, now I have to say, the nurses that he's seen and the doctors that John saw were very kind and very professional and were amazing, considering how they were, you know, the facilities that they were working under. And it was just horrific. And now John's, we met people that have been there for days and you know, and you just, you can't complain, because you're just sitting there looking, going, how is this possible? And John was released from hospital on two days later. And as a result, has a sore arm, and he thought, you know, he had to go and get an X-ray, but it was from lying in that trolley. And I mean, you know, he's 88 years old. I mean, is this how we take care of our nearest and dearest? And I mean, you just can't do that anymore. And the only reason I'm calling is that I think it just cannot be ignored. If I turned my head like the man in reception and just said, that's not my problem, if we all did that, then who's going to stand up and help? You know, it's just enough. And to, you know, that election, all the money that was wasted, the children's hospital, I could go on and on and on. It's just, is it bad management? It's definitely misuse of funds. And I just think enough is enough.
I appreciate, Sharon, you getting in touch with us, you know, and I know it's never easy to be the person to talk about your own parent or your loved one's experience. It's not easy, and I know it is heartbreaking for you and Michelle to do this and to tell your story today. But as you said, Sharon, you know you just kind of reached a point that you couldn't sit back really and say nothing anymore after what you witnessed.
No. I mean, my mum had a stroke, and really bad stroke, and many of the time I had to walk away and let her Kenny Hospital and leave her, and because my circumstances, obviously I would go back and see her, but I couldn't stay at her bedside, and I, you know, and you're filled with so many emotions, and you're on coping mode, but at the end of the day, you know, when you revisit it, it brings everything back, and you just think, my God. No lessons learned. And like you said, Andrea, from Letterkenny to Limerick, I mean, it's everyone
You've
has
had
a story.
The experience
to tell.
Of both, yeah.
Yeah.
How is your dad? How's John now?
John has a sore arm, but, you know, he got through it. And bless him, he's like very complimentary of the nurses and the doctors. And then when you're in there, you realize these are just young girls who are coping so well and smiling, and you know, it was a bit like being in an airport waiting for your gate, you know, waiting at a gate. It didn't look like a hospital. It was just so sad.
Yeah.
And you know, if you're lying in a corridor and your blanket is, a lot of them, I don't think they even had blankets, they're just lying there, maybe their jumper goes up and some skin is on view, and you know, where's their dignity gone to? You know, like, there's just a duty of care there and respect, and it's gone. It's gone.
There's a text from a listener who says, listening to Michelle and Sharon today, your caller's experience is all too familiar in UHL and St John's. The staff are completely overwhelmed. There's an absolute disordered perception of what is normal in the health service, that you're somewhat lucky to be seen or treated. It's absolutely beyond belief what happens to people in need in our country, particularly for elderly patients who have no advocates or no advocacy. You see, Michelle, I'm thinking of you like, as a nurse, and you've trained for years, and you've worked in practice as a healthcare practitioner for many years, it must be very frustrating for you and your colleagues and other nurses who are taking, I suppose, the brunt of this when people have loved ones waiting in trolleys and corridors.
I mean, there was quite a bit of verbal abuse directed at staff, you know, and that is horrendous. I mean, it isn't their fault. But I think what people, the message really that I'd like to get out there is we're all human beings. And at some stage, all of us will have a health problem. And hopefully we won't need to go to A&E, but it is going to come down the road at some point. So something needs to be done now. The situation is completely out of control. And as Sharon said there, it's the perception as well. Yeah, that's the way it is. And it's acceptable, but it's not.
You shouldn't stand for it.
It is not acceptable.
Alison has got in touch. She says, I spent the summer with my beloved dad in hospitals, Letterkenny in Donegal, and then in the City and the Royal Hospitals in Belfast. So I've actually experienced both regimes between the HSE and the NHS. The issues are the same. The doctors and the nurses are trying their best in desperate sets of circumstances. There's just too many people. No beds, most importantly for older people, no respite beds. They're kept in hospital because there's no interim care. It's so, so sad. It's going to get worse. It'll affect everybody. One consultant actually said to me that there's only two sure things in life nowadays, that you'll care for someone and you will require care, and we're not in a position to do either. It's awful. That's the text from Alison today. Michelle and Sharon, best wishes to both of you for your mum, Michelle, and your dad, or John, Sharon as well, and thank you both for getting in touch and telling us about your experiences here on Lunchtime Live. Look, if anybody else listening today has found themselves in a similar situation to Sharon or Michelle, you want to drop me an email, it's lunchtimelive@newstalk.com. We might come back to this tomorrow, because they're right. Like, the two women are right. You know, we really shouldn't accept this. Like, we shouldn't just say, if you go to Limerick, you know, you can expect this. Shouldn't be the case. And it is unfair on the staff and the doctors at University Hospital Limerick, but they're right. They should speak out and say something. So if you want to drop us an email, do. We've got in touch with Limerick Hospital to see if they want to get in touch with us about Michelle and Sharon's circumstances or situations. But we might come back to this a little bit later, or certainly on tomorrow's programme.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday.
Brought to you by Active Iron
on News Talk.